Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and my Stockley Park mistake, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, mate.
That was a good one, wasn't it?
I like that.
I was quite pleased with that one. And it leads us in quite nicely to talking about Chelsea. I mean, we don't really want to linger on this too much, because it's ultimately quite depressing, but there were some talking points. So let's cover off the football stuff first. Firstly, a very interesting starting 11. And when I say interesting, one that I immediately thought, okay, happy to see that midfield, but not happy with the back line, which included Vertonghen back in at centre-back on the left of a back three, and Japhet Tanganga playing wide on the right in the back of a... I mean, it's a back five, really, wasn't it? He didn't really play a wing-back role, but he was certainly on the right where the ball got shuttled out to him plenty, and that's not his game. Bardi, what was your reaction when you saw the starting 11?
Yeah, I was a bit like you. I was happy to see Ndombele and Lo Celso combined, but yeah, that back five was a mess. Vertonghen, you know, we've spoken at length about Vertonghen and the fact that Tanganga was, he's done okay in fullback roles, but I really don't know what Mourinho was expecting of him. I guess it was just to sit and play five across the back, but it didn't quite work like that. So yeah, I was a bit disappointed by that. It did seem a bit negative, but then maybe he didn't trust Aurier in that wing-back role, which is a shame, because I think he might have done a little bit better than Tanganga there. Not that Tanganga had a bad game.
I think Aurier was also very much overdue a break.
Yeah.
I thought Aurier was really poor in the last couple of games, but I'm willing to accept that his level was dropped because he is desperately in need of a rest. Same for Dele, who was on the bench. And the interesting thing, Nathan, before every match, you post your sort of predicted team shapes or some suggested team shapes based on the lineups. I don't think you got this one right. It was a 5-4-1, which was a real surprise.
Yeah, I was really excited about the midfield three of Winks and Ndombele and Lo Celso, and couldn't think past it, and wasn't concerned about the defenders, and didn't consider the possibility that Lo Celso would be playing sort of in off the wing, as it were. Mm. So yeah, no, I was really positive about the lineup, and I didn't click. I wasn't in gear for like, oh, hang on, we're playing five dedicated defenders.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, I don't know.
Why do you think he played Lo Celso on the right?
Just as a matter of, like you said, it was a back five rather than a back three. So if you're maintaining that sort of line of five, then you need some width in the line in front. So you don't really want to play a full five and then a full three. You want a four to sort of spread out. And then also, because you're like dealing with an odd number and an even number, you get to defend the space in between the spaces. Jesus, this is not easy to explain.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Picture five lines on a pitch, you're defending the spaces between those five lines rather than the five lines themselves.
Exactly.
Bardi, sorry, I cut in on you. What were you going to say there, mate?
No, it's fine. I think there was a sentence Nathan used there, which I think explains it perfectly. It's the fact that they were all specialist defenders, and that's what really hurt us. That even in the wide positions, if you compare how Chelsea lined up with Reece James and Marcos Alonso, they're kind
murderer.
of...
Murderer.
Well, we should stop saying that because he scored 3 goals against us now. His goal scoring record against Spurs is insane. Plus, he's got a load of assists. So I think maybe we should leave him alone and he maybe not get so inspired. But yeah, they're 4th and 5th defender, for want of a better word. Mm. If you compare them to ours of Davies and Tanganga, it was just completely different. And even though Mourinho talked a lot pre-game about matching up with Lampard, we didn't match them at all. I think we would needed to have seen maybe Sessegnon, and I know Aurier was tired, but yeah, Sessegnon and Aurier, and then maybe move Tanganga in for Vertonghen. That way we would have matched up against them a little bit better, perhaps.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think I agree broadly with what you're saying there, Bards. Up front was Bergvin, who I thought actually did some good things. Nathan, what did you make of his performance?
Yeah, I was really... not really happy, because obviously you have to take the weight of the game into that, but I was much more impressed with Bergvine than Lucas, for example. You know, immediately in the opening sort of 20 minutes, he did a great job of bringing others into play. He demonstrated a good first touch, awareness of his surroundings, awareness of his teammates, understanding of time, of how quickly you need to release the ball. He doesn't look... So I watched one of the 2 games he played up front for PSV recently, and so I got to see like a full 90 minutes of a team who possessed more of the ball and everything, and he definitely has moments where he looks uncomfortable in that role, where you can tell that he's not sort of accustomed to playing as the furthest forward player. But he just has a more rounded skill set and sort of versatile abilities that allow him to, you know, for me, do a much better job there than Lucas was doing.
Yeah, I think what you lose by moving Bergvain inside is worth it, because he's much better with his back to goal. He's got better awareness of players around him. He's got his head up, which is a big help. That's one of the issues with Lucas. He's incredibly good at dribbling with the ball, incredibly good. But the dribbles are often wasted because he doesn't get his head up, doesn't look at what he's dribbling towards, and doesn't know who's around him. So if he gets through, which he often does because he's got really quick feet, sometimes he ends up like in an area that is less useful than the area he started in, which is kind of frustrating. Occasionally he'll do a bit of magic and he'll burst through in a box and get a shot away and maybe even score a goal, but it seems kind of more luck than judgment. Bergvain was much more sensible in possession. He was trying to link up. The issue is we didn't get enough players around him, and one or two occasions that we did resulted in chances, but ultimately we were very conservative with our play. Now, Bardi, do you think that was a mistake from Mourinho to be so defensive focused?
Yeah, I think so. But Chelsea's pressing, and in Jorginho, Kovacic, they have 2 excellent central midfielders, and then in Mount and Barkley, they had 2 workhorses. I mean, Mount, that little boy doesn't stop running. He's quite the intense presser, and he the way he presses reminds me of how Ali used to press back in the day. It's just incessant, and yeah, we were unable to get the ball through midfield. Then Ndombele, they handled him really well. They learned from Southampton that you just take him out, and I think the more he was being wiped out, you could see it was affecting him and his confidence, and they really broke him just by being hatchet men on him constantly.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about Ndombele, not his talent levels, but he just gets smashed into so often, and his style of play encourages players to put challenges in, so naturally he's going to field them, and he doesn't bounce back like someone like Moussa Dembele did. Nathan, are you concerned?
Not on that particular thing. So yeah, Dembele would sort of ride the foul out and not get the foul called as a result, and sort of play advantage for himself, as it were, whereas Ndombele will just hit the deck every time. I get how that can be annoying, especially when it's like you want to build some momentum against Chelsea, you want to sort of get things going and get a foot on the game that way, and when you do have the ball, you want to flow. So I get how that can be frustrating, but I also think that there's a perfectly acceptable way of utilizing the sort of take the foul every time route, and just be, you know, optimize that more and accept that that's what's going to happen, and make sure we find a way to use that to our advantage.
Yeah, and although he wasn't particularly great in this game, you have to hope that the 60 minutes that he got into his legs will benefit him in the long term, and hopefully he can kind of put a string of games together and become a mainstay, because he's certainly one of the best players we have at the moment. And we had a question from Tom Wedge, who says, what's the least worst option for starting up front should Moura ever get a starting place again? Bardi, where do you stand now? Are you thinking Lucas? Are you thinking Derry? Or are you thinking Bergvain?
You know, I know you, Chris. You know where I stand, and you've kind of set me up, so it sounds like, oh, I'm now on your anti-Lucas trail, which which I am. Yes, I'm completely with you. But Lucas is, you know, we're not utilising his strengths, like you said, his quick feet and everything else like that. He's playing far too deep, and he does nothing to help us in the build-up. If you think of like a conveyor belt, he's at the final end of it. He should never be further down towards the start, because he's too unreliable, his touch and his vision and everything else. As for where we go from here, I think it's got to be a combination of Bergvain, Delhi and Lamella playing those kind of forward roles. I think Lucas needs to take a rest. I think he started every single game under Mourinho. He's physically and probably mentally quite tired. He just needs to be taken out of the game for a while, because he keeps repeating the same things and repeating the same mistakes, and he's not producing goals or assists, and that's a huge problem for us.
I think he's also a really effective option to bring on towards the end of games, because he's got those quick feet. So against tired legs, that's the ideal time to kind of get the most from him. And I can see him scoring goals late in games that he wouldn't get at the start, for example. So I don't know. I can't see Mourinho doing it, because he loves Lucas. He said at the very start of his Spurs tenure that he wanted to sign Lucas. And I think you're right that he's played certainly the majority of matches, if not all of them. And I can't see him being removed from the team, but I think it's essential, to be honest. I don't want to go into too much detail about the goals we conceded and the rest of the match, because it'll just depress us. But I do think it's worth lingering briefly on the Lo Celso incident and Stockley Park admitting to their mistake, because it was certainly an interesting talking point. Firstly, do we all agree that it was a sending off? Bardi, did you think that was a clear red?
I looked at it a few times. It's a red card, but at the time I thought there wasn't... Maybe it wasn't Ted. He wasn't staring straight at the player, and it wasn't a... He knew what he was doing. He left his foot in, and I think a yellow card would have been sufficient. I don't think it was a proper kick out and a proper swing at him.
How about you, Nathan?
I don't think that it was deliberate. I think that he's just trying to protect the ball, and he's not aware that Aspilicueta is underneath him. I think that what we've seen in this particular incident is like yet again where the rules fall short or fall against common sense. I think that the video assistant referee has agreed with what I've said there. In fact, we know that because it's been reported today that the assistant referee saw it as an attempt to protect the ball, an unawareness that Aspilicueta was underneath him, and that is why he has considered it a non-foul. But that is not how the rule is written, and intention doesn't actually matter. So I think it was a good call based on common sense and a bad call on how the rules are actually written. And therefore, the problem is the rules.
Yeah, I don't think VAR helped themselves by that statement and by saying they got it wrong. They should have just released a statement that they thought there was no intent and everything else and just gone with it. Why they felt the need to, you know, it's like you get caught out for doing something bad. Your wife or your girlfriend finds that you've done something wrong and you're like, no, actually, I didn't do that, but I did this instead. It's just like you gain nothing. Just get, you've done it, it's done, go away and then forget about it.
Are you trying to own up to something here, Bardi?
No.
I was talking to some foreign friends of mine today about VAR, and they said, look, everyone else except for you English, we like VAR. The thing is that in England you have the best referees and the worst VAR. That's what you hate. Yeah. It everywhere else it's the other way around.
That's an interesting point, and I've said many a time that I think it's dumbing down referee standards. So I think it probably was unintentional, but I don't think it's very... You can't easily tell that.
No, you can't tell.
But I think it's almost irrelevant that it was unintentional, because it was very dangerous, and yes, accidents happen, but I don't know. I think there was a strong argument for a red card there. The only thing is, it looks so much worse slowed down. So much worse. In real speed, real time, I went back and I rewound. And actually, it doesn't look that bad. You sort of think, I can see why this wasn't given. The more it slowed down, the more outrageous the decision becomes to look. And then the sort of Lampard's outrage added to it. And then you get this correction come through. We hear that he can't get a retrospective ban.
No.
And I think that's a good thing for the rules and obviously for Spurs. But it's left a very sort of awkward question mark over the implementation of the system again. Yet another awkward question mark.
If I was to be a pedantic dickhead about it, I would say when you run, you land with your full weight on your foot every time. So if we were to remove intention completely, isn't every single step dangerous play?
Yeah, but in that situation where you know when a player's on the ground and you challenge for the ball and you know there's a risk that you could catch them, you can move out of the way. So whilst I don't think he went out to get him, I think he could have avoided him, if that makes sense.
Even if he's not aware that he's there.
He was aware. So I'm not saying he tried to hurt him. I think he could have done more.
You think he's what, like trying to scare him off?
I also think he is very spiteful. And don't get me wrong, a large part of me really likes that. He did try to have a few players after that as well. Like he did a couple of other challenges that I was slightly worried about after that incident. Like he's trying to make up for the mistake.
He's Argentine. He's feisty.
Yeah,
he's very feisty.
There was a hip high challenge on somebody, which was a little bit naughty as well.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that's enough VAR chat. We had an email from Joe Gilby. Thank you, Joe, for your email. He talks about the low block strategy, and he's talking about the fact that it used to work as a strategy for Mourinho before teams pressed like they do now. So he's sort of saying the low block is outdated against pressing teams. And he also said, surely you've got enough attacking talent to go toe-to-toe with the likes of Chelsea. How do you feel about that statement, Nathan?
Just that final statement there at the end. I sympathise with that view, and I also sympathise with the exact opposite, which is Mourinho sort of crying about the state of our injuries and the like. I think that we are within the realm of Chelsea to at least challenge them more than we did. So I definitely think, you know, both angles on that are valid.
And what about the statement about pressing?
Yeah, the low block is both outdone by high pressing and outdone by another low block. And Mourinho, you know, almost said exactly those words post-match. He said it specifically in relation to us being a goal down, which is sort of an interesting criticism of Mourinho's dependence on manipulating game state, right? This is what he's always done, is that he uses the opposition's needs to attack in both a draw and a lose situation to make the low block useful. But as soon as you go a goal down, you know, what do you do? So, the criticism there is definitely valid in terms of sort of not knowing how to move out of that situation. I would actually have gone further towards the defensive before the first goal. I think that we should have drawn Chelsea further forwards. We should have engaged them deeper. We should have been more passive in the early stages and really sort of done a Burnley on them. I think that that is the best way to play against Chelsea. But I also conversely think that if Mourinho is serious about us, because, you know, him developing into a manager who wants to play high-line football, possession football, then that's something that you have to commit to on a weekly basis. If you look at sort of Pochettino's first 2-3 years, we consistently lost against Liverpool and the like because we had this match after match after match commitment to how we were going to play, because I think that's really important if you want to instill that mindset. If you want to teach someone how to press high, there are different goals in that, and this is what I looked at recently in my video piece. There are different goals in pressing high and in being in a medium or a low block. So if you want to instill those principles and those values, you can't be also trying to learn the opposite at the same time.
And I guess the really frustrating thing for this match in particular is that in the second half, we showed, once Chelsea had kind of worn themselves out a bit, we showed that we could play a possession style, and we played a possession style really quite effectively for the last sort of 20-25 minutes. And people will look at that and say, well, there you go, there's evidence that we could have done that from the very beginning. Why didn't we, I don't know, start Lamella and start with a bit more intensity and try and play through midfield? I would argue, actually, we were only able to do that once Chelsea had tired themselves out from the pressing style. So Mourinho made a judgment call. It wasn't an easy judgment call. Chelsea then have a relatively easy method of playing against us because they know we can't push the ball forward early and high because we've got a, 5'9" striker. They know we can't play through midfield effectively because they're going to be pressing us like anything. I thought Mount and Barkley did a terrific job with their high-energy pressing with, as Bardi says, Jorginho and the quite phenomenal Kovacic behind them. So the option for Spurs is to pass it out to the fullbacks. And it, time and again, it got shuttled out wide to Tanganga and Davis. And Tanganga was incapable of pressing the ball up the line because that's not his skill set. And Davis was incredibly wasteful in possession where he was just essentially ending up chipping the ball forward. So they kind of had us where they wanted us. It's not easy to find solutions when you've got such restricted squad options. Bardi, how do you feel? Do you feel like we could have tried to match Chelsea a bit more?
Yeah, I think you made a really interesting point on Davies. He was really wasteful. He gave the ball away 25 times in that match, which was more than...
I'm surprised it was that many, but he was very poor.
Yeah, more than anyone else on the pitch. 54% pass accuracy. Only Caballero got worse than that. And that was part of the problem, that we constantly fell into their pressing traps. We went wide to the wing backs, and from then it just ended up into a kind of punt forwards where of course we've got no one to receive it long. But I think there's also a weakness there that the pass back into central midfield wasn't on either, because of Mount was watching Winks. Lo Celso was kind of miles away from Davies, so he couldn't come and receive it, and Ndombele wasn't there either. So there's huge problems with Spurs. But I think fundamentally our problem is we're constantly having to play two ways each game. So we have two tactics. We do the low block for 50, 60 minutes, see how we are. And then we start to play a bit more like us for the final half hour, which I think is down to the fact that we don't have players who can play one way for 90 minutes. If you look at the players that we brought on, Dele's knackered, Lamela, you know, when you're relying on Lamela, who's the most injury-prone player that I can remember since Anderton, it's a sad state of affairs. He's almost become our least injured player, which is weird, you know, when you think he's always been in the treatment room.
Yeah, we should try and talk positive briefly. We asked if anyone had any positive questions, and Paul Sandy responded with this: how pleased are you with the development of Sanchez in terms of positional awareness and starting position? Bardi, I know you're a big fan, so wax lyrical about Davinson.
Occasionally somebody I back has to come good, you know. One of my horses.
Stop clock, etc.
Yeah, one of my horses has to win. And if it had to, you know, because it did become a Foyth versus Sanchez thing with a lot of people with me. But it was never that at all.
It didn't need to be. It didn't need to be, did it? Because we've got both of them and they're both good young prospects.
Exactly. But yeah, I'm delighted with Sanchez. He's highly reliable. I think him and Tanganga, I would like to see those two either playing as a two or a three. I think Alderweireld has been found out a few times, and the way that him and Vertonghen were stripped for pace by Giroud is a huge warning. I think Alderweireld, of course, he has a future. He signed a new contract, but I don't know if he's going to work in a two from now on. He might be as a central defender in a three, and then with Sanchez and Tanganga with the legs either side of him. That's something that I would like to see. But Sanchez is the way he's grown has been terrific. Terrific. He has still his occasional wobbly game where he gets bullied a bit, but no, I'm very happy with him.
How about you, Nathan? Are you feeling more positive about Sanchez's performance?
What was the cup game recently where he dropped an absolute shocker? Who was that?
It was Middlesbrough up against their massive striker. Gave him all kinds.
Yeah,
of problems.
He often. So I think that. So he came obviously to Colombia and then Eredivisie, and I think that like he's such like an athletic specimen that he's always had the upper hand against whoever he's playing against. So he's just been able to bully his way to like high level football, and I think that only now we see him in the Premier League occasionally come up against people who are either faster or stronger than him, and he sort of doesn't know how to because he doesn't have the advantage, he doesn't know how to play as the smaller or the slower man. So I think that's where he sometimes has trouble, but hey, he certainly has improved since that Middlesbrough game, so I'm pretty happy on that front.
Yeah, and in many ways he has become the most reliable centre back. I take Bardi's point about Alderweireld because he's dipped in form somewhat. I still think he's a player that needs to start every game for us, purely for his organisational and leadership qualities and his ability to pass the ball from the back. But I do take the point that he's dropping off in terms of his quality. I don't think many people would argue that he is where he was 2 years ago in terms of overall performance level. That's certainly clear. God, I just turned the positive question into a negative.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So talking point two is Troy Parrott. We had a whole list of questions about Troy from Doug Keith, Will Coyes, Tree Mace, Richard Joyce and Tim Hopkin. I've got some views on Parrott.
Go on.
But basically the question seems to be essentially why isn't Parrott playing? Why is he not ready? What are the risks in playing him? How bad must he be to have not got performances, appearances by now? Shall I start?
Do it.
I was convinced originally that Mourinho was being overcautious about Troy Parrott's non-inclusion, that he thought he wasn't up to it as a Premier League striker, that he couldn't cope physically at this point, that essentially he'd not had enough football at any other level, which is kind of partly his fault because he's taken him out of the under-23s to put him in the first team squad. I've changed my opinion now. I think it's very clear that Mourinho was talking in a very thinly veiled way, which started off a bit more thickly veiled, about Troy Parrott's mentality and a dedication to becoming a top-level footballer. And I'm not one to drop ITK, but I had definitely heard murmurings that he needs a role model and that Spurs have attempted to bring in people to have conversations with Parrott about how he should handle himself off the pitch. We've also seen, well, there's a viral video of Troy Parrott essentially putting his cock and balls in the face of, there's no other way to say it, putting his cock and balls in the face of a teammate when he was a 16-year-old, which at the very least isn't great, even if it's team banter, and at the very worst is a lot more serious than that.
Yeah.
And he's also been pictured during the winter break in Dubai with Delhi and a close friend of his who is the son of a known drug trafficker in Ireland. Not that that's necessarily a problem. Who am I to judge who he should be friends with? But the point is that this guy that he's hanging out with seems to want to be like a hanger-on of celebrities and likes to just Instagram all the pictures in the world of him and famous people. Look, I'm not saying that that's not a genuine friendship necessarily. I've got no idea, but it's not the best image for him to be putting out. And whilst I agreed initially that he should have a week off with the rest of the players and have some time to relax and let his hair down and, you know, enjoy the winter break, part of me then sort of thinks back to what Harry Kane would have done during that same period, and he wouldn't have done that. He would have been, well, he'd have probably stayed at home and been on the golf course most days, but spending the days working on his finishing, because he was an absolutely dedicated professional. Now, I'm aware that this is slightly hypocritical, because when Marcus Edwards was getting criticism about his attitude, in inverted commas, I was very protective of him and said, you know, he's a teenager, let's let him be a teenager. But I'm also aware that if Marcus Edwards was doing these things that Parrott's doing, can you imagine the uproar? Yeah. It would have been messy and people would have said, get him out of our club. Obviously, Parrott is a huge talent. He's a huge, exciting talent and hope for the future of Tottenham Hotspur. And if things go well, he should be a star striker for us in the future. And I think what Mourinho is doing at this point is sending a message to him about being more professional and being ready to take his chance. I've rambled on. What do you think, Bardi?
Yeah, I think Parrott needs to realise what this situation is, that he's got an opportunity to play Champions League football.
Huge opportunity.
Yeah, at 18 years old, to be a regular starter from now until the end of the season. This doesn't happen to a teenager. This doesn't happen to many. A lot of strikers haven't come to Tottenham because they never wanted to play second fiddle to Harry Kane. Now, all of a sudden, the position's open. And, you know, this is his moment to actually stand up and show something and then move on from here. And, through bad choices, whatever's happened, doesn't seem to have happened. And he's disappointed Mourinho. And Mourinho ultimately makes the decisions. And whatever he's done has not pleased his manager. And that's the reason why he's not getting game time or even being featured on the bench at the moment.
And how about you, Nathan? What are your overall thoughts on this?
Yeah, I've taken a sort of a similar path with what you've gone through. He is ready physically. He is ready in terms of talent, but it definitely I come round to the idea that he isn't ready in terms of maturity and mentality. So, yeah, you know, like Buddy says, there's a big opportunity here for him. Look, I get it. Like, when I was 18, I was, like, drunk in a park 3 times a week and I failed my A-levels. So, like, I'm not one to speak. I'm certainly, you know, not as far to say get it together, young man, but it's like his team needs him and there's an opportunity, so let's do it.
I mean, if we're revealing what we were like at 18, I had to be showered down by my mother and father because I was just covered in my own vomit. So, you know, Parrott is far, he's handling himself better than we did, Nate. Let's put it that way. I hope it works out for him. I really hope it works out for him. I hope he can convince Mourinho that he has what it takes. And I think in some ways you need a manager to take a chance on a player and kind of give him the olive branch and say, I'm going to give you this opportunity. Yeah. But what I want back from you is to show me that you are a committed professional. And they meet in the middle and they meet halfway. What's upset me a little bit is that he hasn't even been on the bench, because even if he's behaving like a complete dickhead off the pitch, which is possible, we need him. We need someone who can play up front. And he's a very good young player and he could certainly do a better job than Lucas Moura right now.
Who's a fascist.
Yeah. Well, this is the other thing. No one's perfect, right? No one's perfect. Certainly Mourinho seems to be a bit hard line around off-pitch behaviours. We can say that from the fact that you can see that Danny Rose has been sent away from the club. Dele Alli, ever since that that Snapchat thing, has sort of been sidelined. It might be in relation to that. Who knows? So maybe he's just a real strict guy and wants players to behave impeccably off the pitch. Let's hope it sorts itself out. Tottenham Tim, who is Tim_Ogin on Twitter, says, do we miss Sissoko? Bardi, Sissoko is due back relatively soon. Mourinho's been saying that's another solution for the team. Have you missed Sissoko?
You know, when a player has a long-term injury, we always forget the bad side. We only think of the good side. So the longer a player is injured, the better they become. But I do actually think we miss Sissoko in that weird kind of gut-busting movement of somebody getting beyond our strikers, our lack of strikers. So I don't think we miss him in terms of keeping possession or anything else like that, but he's another body and he has a bit of tenacity and a bit of oomph about him, where at the moment we seem a little bit flat in midfield.
And you, Nathan?
I do not personally miss Sissoko that much, but, you know, more bodies is more bodies. It's a hell of an injury turnaround if he's coming back soon. That's impressive. But I guess, you know, he's an outlier, isn't he?
Mm. I think when he comes back, I would like to see him play on the right of a front three or as a sub, but nowhere else. And actually him being an option on the right of a front three, yeah, will be genuinely quite useful now. Stevie B seems to be primed for a striker role.
Mm. I mean, he's not going to solve our goal scoring problems, but he will enable us to press a bit. You know, he's definitely He's definitely got, and he could be a kind of a foil for Ndombele while he's trying to work himself back. So I think it's definitely a good thing that he's coming back. I mean, he is Meccano. I remember when he pulled his hamstring. I think it was maybe against United or somebody at Wembley. And when a player goes down with a hamstring, that's them done. But he had a little bit of ice, a little bit of spray, and they strapped a new one into his leg, and he was off again.
So we've got a few more questions to rattle through before we leave you. I'll start off with a shout out for Andres Loftager. We've actually almost pretty much covered his question on Alderweireld already, so we'll skip that one. But thanks for the question, Andres. Greg Jenner says, does Foyth have a future at the club? We've spoken a bit about Foyth already in terms of Davinson Sanchez, but I mean, he's been injured himself. I wrote in a blog at the weekend that perhaps he would have been a useful player to play right back this week if we'd really wanted to rest Aurier. What do you think, Bardi? Do you think Foyth has a future?
No, I think he's done.
Wow. How about you, Nathan?
I wasn't aware that he was injured this whole time. My finger not on the pulse on that one. I thought that he was just not being chosen.
It's quite a recent injury, to be fair.
Oh, okay. Okay, so he hasn't been chosen and then he's got injured. Okay, you know what? Fuck it. I happen to know that we were definitely trying to move him on in January.
Wow. Such a shame, but... You know, yeah. Mourinho's not going to like every player, and that's fine.
He'll go on to have a great career at Sampdoria or something like that.
We'll regret selling Foyth if we sell him.
Definitely.
Daniel Platt says, can you guys recall any other high-profile fitness turnarounds or adaptations to the Premier League after having a tough first year? Looking for some hope on Ndombele. Nathan, you've come up with a few.
Yeah, so just within our squad, I think Son Heung-min took a good year to settle in. I think that physically, Lo Celso has taken half a season to sort of get up to ready. And then you're looking like even more long-term. Arjen Robben, for me, is a huge example of a player who like really, really suffered with injury problems for a long, long time. And then sort of like in his late 20s, early 30s, sort of got it together physically and quickly became one of the very best players in the world for a few seasons. He's a motivation to me as someone who's just constantly suffering with one injury after another.
I've come up with some others. So Etienne Capoue, when he first came to Spurs, was a bit of a lump and couldn't cope with the pace of the game, but now looks a very accomplished player for Watford and pretty much plays every minute of every game, I believe. So I would say he's one to look towards. But also Fred of United, who, when I watched him play his first Premier League game, I made a joke on Twitter that got about 1,000 likes about how terrible he was. He's actually really good now and looks sharp. And he covers ground well, and he's press resistant. And I sort of think maybe that's the guy we could look towards as an Ndombele comparison to give us a bit of hope. And Naby Keita as well has been in and out of the Liverpool team with severe injury issues. Why are you chuckling?
Because she's in the England team.
Sigh. He's been in and out of the Liverpool team with niggling injuries, but we know he's an excellent player and he's someone that I suspect will come very good at some point. So kind of keep your eye on that one. But it's not an uncommon thing. It happens regularly, and it's partly to do with the pace of the game. It's partly to do with how physical the game is compared to a lot of European football, where referees protect players a lot more.
Yeah.
All these things have an impact. So I don't think, I mean, I am nervous about Ndombele, I must admit, but I don't think we need to panic yet. I think there is some hope there. Guy Shelton says...
Oh, you just skipped
one. Oh, sorry, Bards.
I was going to come up with two kind of early left field ones, like Kanu, his heart virtually broke and they fixed his heart and he came back and had a great career. And Roberto Baggio, he did his ACL. They thought he'd never play before he went to Fiorentina, and he found Buddhism and fixed himself and went on to become one of the best players the world's ever seen. So maybe Ndombele should become a Buddhist.
Shock it, you mentioned an Italian. Guy Shelton says, Jose said he has spent his time away from management developing a new strategy and philosophy. Was this a lie to impress Levy so he could get the gig? Bardi, what do you think? Was Jose lying?
I think he's got one hell of a PowerPoint slide deck in his armory, and he probably did some impressive things. But I said after the game on Saturday that I'm giving Jose a time until the summer to see what happens with him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm willing to say next Christmas, because he needs another win. This season's a write-off. He's trying to do the impossible with the squad we've got right now with the injury situation. He needs a window where he can buy his own players, develop a proper philosophy in pre-season, and then we can judge him. What do you think, Nathan?
I don't think he lied. I understand anyone who gets the impression it was a lie, but I think there are enough signs that he's trying to build something that he hasn't built before, and approaching the game differently. Not so much in the last two games, fair enough, and there are issues with being sort of reactive in the middle, But I think that he wants us to play a high line and he wants us to have the ball. It's just going to be very, very difficult. So that's the real question. Can he do it? Not does he want to?
Nice. And we're going to end with a change of pace. Excuse me. That was an alarm. My phone's telling me.
That wasn't part of your segment.
No,
I thought it was. I thought that was that change of pace alarm.
Whitney's put his own soundboard along.
Oh, I wish I was that forward thinking. No, that's me telling me the oven. That's the oven timer. My dinner's ready.
Okay, I thought this was something you'd introduce, that whenever you were going to do something a bit left field, you're going to sound...
I mean, I certainly could do that from now on. So, Scuffed Like Shit says, best memory you have at White Hart Lane that wasn't happening on the pitch? Nathan, does anything come to mind?
Not immediately. I really like this question. I put this in because I thought it was a really sweet question, but I haven't thought of a particularly good one myself. I don't know. So, Brendan took me to a game recently. He's over from the States, and it was really nice to meet him. Obviously, I bumped into you at games before. I've met Bardi at games before. Gone down the pub after, and all of that stuff is great. I don't have a specific individual memory. I just thought it was a really sweet question.
Yeah, it's lovely. My memory is so bad that I find it really hard to sort of pinpoint anything very specific these days. I think I drank too much when I was younger and it's destroyed my memory forever. But I've got sort of more general memories of going with my family to watch matches. We would go, the four of us would go, so mum, dad, me and my sister, and we'd have a very sort of similar routine for every match. We'd generally park at the Irish Centre. We walk up to the ground quite early. We would always get a burger from the guy that I came to know as the Colonel. Many people will know who I'm talking about when I say that. He was kind of famous the sort of corner of the Paxton,
yep,
Paxton Road end. I loved it because my dad would go and order the burgers and he would always call my dad Colonel. It turns out he pretty much called everyone Colonel, but I just loved the fact that he called my dad Colonel. My dad's definitely not a Colonel. So we'd have our burgers and we'd go and get a program. We'd get into the ground nice and early. We'd sort of take in the sights and watch the players warm up. And I just remember it always being sunny and the grass being so green and pristine, and the noise that the seats made when you got off your feet to watch, I don't know, Rule Fox or Matthew Etherington make a dart down the wing. I just have such happy memories of that. And then quite often, one of our memories of travelling home from White Hart Lane around Christmas time is that when the nights drew in and it got a bit darker, you'd have these kind of really garish Christmas lights around the ground and on my route home, and we would do like a family game of who could spot the worst Christmas lights, and I loved it. It was great. It was like the perfect ending to watching Spurs. Bardi, how about you?
I think probably my first game I saw White Hart Lane was when we played Sheffield Wednesday in 94 when Klingsman scored that wonder goal. And I just remember being taken to the stadium and walking in and thinking it was the biggest thing I'd ever seen in my life. I mean, I'd been to Wembley a few times for Charity Shields and stuff like that, but I'd never been to Spurs before. And it was the biggest thing I ever saw. And I just remember the crowd being crazy and passionate. And if you look back at the game now on YouTube, half the stands are empty. It's insane, you know. And there's also non-football related. The first time I went into the new stadium when I did I was part of the kind of tour thing that went to see it while they were still building it. And then probably when me and my mate Sasha, we went to our first kind of football matches, like we thought we were adults in 99, like without any family members.
Nice.
You know, we got there early. We didn't know where to go, where to pick up our tickets or anything. And we went to watch Spurs against FC Zimbru in the UEFA Cup. We won 3-0. And I think I even saw Tim Sherwood score a goal for Tottenham.
And on that note, on that happy, happy note, we leave you.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindner. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.